Welcome to the first episode of The Doll Project. I'm your host, Saya the Jaffer. The Doll Project is a mini-series that explores dal, also known as lentils or legumes, and the rich and diverse ways that people of the South Asian diaspora cook it. It's also about storytelling, memory, migration, and culture. In this first episode, I invited Sailaja Krishnamurthy to interview me about where the Doll Project came from and what you can expect to hear in this series. My name is Saya the Jaffer, and I am your host of the new radio miniseries, The Doll Project. I have a background in some radio. I used to work at CFRC for a few years, and I did many kinds of spoken word radio programs about food or about social justice news. And so it feels good to be producing content again after so long and on a project close to my heart.
Awesome. Okay, well, I will introduce myself. I'm Sailaja Krishnamurthy. I'm an associate professor in gender studies at Queen's, and I am interested in studying the South Asian diaspora, and I write lots about culture and religion in all kinds of ways. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sailaja, for agreeing to interview me.
Well, we're going to talk about this show that you're launching at CFRC, and so maybe it'd be good for you to just start by saying a little bit about your plan.
So the show itself is meant to be a temporary thing. I've signed up for a summer time slot, so my show will be airing every other Thursday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston or cfrc.ca, and also available on the archive. In the episodes, at least the ones that I have in the works, it primarily will involve me asking a friend in the South Asian diaspora to teach me how they know how to make dal or lentil curry of some type of way, shape, or form. And so we cook it together, usually in their kitchen, record that, and then spend some time talking about different kinds of topics. So we might talk about migration, food, culture, or other things that are of interest to them that they're passionate about, and mix that together into a show.
So it sounds like you're going to get to eat a lot of delicious dal while you're working on this. I would love for you to explain a bit more about why dal of all of the different kinds of foods you might have chosen.
I love dal, and there's so many reasons for that. Growing up, we ate a lot of dal in my house because it was something that my dad really liked eating, and we might have eaten it differently. My mom would cook it with cubed beef in it or meat stock, which is kind of a non-traditional thing in a lot of ways. And we would always fight over the potatoes. My sisters and I never wanted to eat the meat. But it was always a comforting and reliable food that we ate frequently and ate it with rice. And I think growing up, as I got older, I became vegan for a few years. It became a staple for me because it was something that was nutritious. It was easy to make. It was accommodating of many diets. If you were vegan or gluten-free or other kinds of things, you could eat it. And I always used to say, and I still do, that I've never met a dal I didn't like. I just really enjoyed, no matter how I ate it or how someone prepared it, I always found it tasty and delicious and something I enjoyed. Whereas I'm a fussy meat eater, and so I feel a little bit embarrassed about going to people's places and they serve some type of meat and I'm like, ooh, I don't want to eat that. But I honestly have never eaten a dal that I didn't like. This is always comforting and delicious. And I think in a more broader sense, to me, dal is, like, if you kind of zoom out, people make it in all kinds of ways. It's an affordable staple. It fuels so much of the global South when you think about lentils and rice combined. And I think people can express so much creativity and ingenuity in how they prepare it to make it delicious and interesting in all kinds of ways. And so it's this humble lentil can offer us so much. And I think, you know, growing up in sometimes in North American culture, meat is so heavily prioritized as a form of protein, which I just never really connected with. And so I think that there's something about celebrating the humble lentil and the dal to kind of, for all that it offers us.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that aspect of your work. And I'm going to come at this question by asking you to say a bit more about the particular kind of dal with beef that your family prepared. And I want to ask that question because I think there's a specific kind of cultural and maybe religious history that is tied to that, and it might give us a way to talk about some other elements of dal.
For sure.
Your family traditionally, or your favorite family dal has beef in it.
I mean, my favorite dal doesn't have beef in it. Mm. And actually, recently when I was talking to my mom about it, I asked her, where did you learn to do that? Did you start doing that? Or did you learn to make dal that way? And she said, no, my mom used to do that too. And so she learned to make dal with meat in it from her mother. But she actually has stopped doing that because my sisters and I didn't like the meat. And so she eventually stopped putting meat in the dal. And it's now her dal is vegetarian.
You know, I was interested in that part because in India, beef is a highly contested form of food, right? And it's contested because for Hindus across South Asia, beef animals, cows, are considered to be sacred, and there's sort of an injunction against eating beef. But also because the people in South Asia who do most commonly have beef as part of their diet are non-Hindus and people from the marginalized and oppressed caste communities across South Asia. So sometimes those things overlap, but where beef is actually an economical food and a usually fairly available food for people, it's a really important source of protein, right? And so I guess I'm kind of identifying that as a difference in the way I, for to use myself as an example, experienced dal as the only protein source in my childhood, which I was brought up vegetarian by very orthodox Hindu parents who would never even imagine that you could put beef in a dal, right? And so thinking about how vastly different our like sort of childhood experiences are of the same kind of food and the different sort of histories and politics that they carry.
Thanks for highlighting that, because it makes me think a bit about, my mom grew up, I think, in a wealthier household than my father did. And so I think food was, and particularly access to meat, wasn't as readily available for my dad growing up. And so I think there was also an emphasis in our house about always having meat on the table because we could eat it or we could afford to eat it. And I think that, but we didn't want to eat it as kids. And obviously that was a kind of like a privilege to say no to that. I didn't think about that broader context. And I think that there's, growing up Muslim, and I find that the way that that has been expressed at times is that animals are there for us to eat. Yeah, so I think that that's an interesting contrast for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is, maybe I also want to circle back to your sort of motivations for doing this project, but it makes me think about how for me as a child, again, you know, from an Orthodox Hindu family, from a Brahmin caste family, what I heard growing up was, if you eat animal flesh, you will become like an animal. So it's very much like the opposite of what you're describing, right? So there's like a worldview piece that is so different and, you know, needs to be challenged and deconstructed in different ways.
And it's also, and that's something that I want to learn more about too, because my family is Khoja Shia, and so our ancestors were, I think, a lower caste Hindus. I won't be able to accurately depict this, but I guess most of my ancestors were what we now know as Ismaili Muslims before they became Khoja Shia, or like 12er Muslims. And so there's this way that your lineage, or that history about, or that relationship in Hinduism, is something that I think is also something that probably Khojas were reacting to or responding to or challenging in their own ways in their kind of religious practice. And because as far as I understand, that early Khojas were kind of mixing together Hinduism, Islam, and other kinds of religious and cultural spiritual practices that I think eventually the community became more orthodox in a 12er Shia kind of way, but it was a much more dynamic space for a long period of time.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's so interesting how much complexity this simple food brings with it, right? And so, you know, kind of coming back to that beginning question, why have you been so drawn to this work and what are you hoping to do with it?
I started thinking more about this project in 2024. That year, I lost three aunts from my father's side of the family. So one of my father's sisters and two of my father's sisters-in-law, and they were the relatives that lived in the States. So they were our closest relatives, because most of my mom's family lived in Pakistan or in, you know, in other parts of the world, and my dad's family was scattered all over. So, you know, our relatives in the States were really kind of the ones that I knew growing up. And it was a lot to lose all of them in that time period. And so I was kind of grappling with this grief and what that means to kind of be losing a lot of a generation of my family. And also the year before that, a close family friend passed away. You know, everyone's an auntie when you're in the South Asian community, right? But she was, you know, she was like my dad's sister, even though we weren't blood related. And she was one of my favorite cooks.
Hmm.
And she was someone whose home I always looked forward to going to, because she cooked differently than my mom did. Like, she cooked with curry leaves and mustard seeds more. I think maybe she had a little bit more, she had different kinds of influences in her food. And I loved everything she made, especially all of her vegetarian food. And so, you know, I felt regret about not making more of an effort to learn how to cook from her before she passed away. I did learn a couple things many years ago, but not recently. And so I thought, obviously people matter in so many kinds of ways, right? But one of the ways that she really mattered to me was the imagination she gave me for food. Mm-hmm. And in addition, just to nourishment, right? That, like, the way she cooked was so inspiring and delicious. And I just was like, oh, I want to find different ways to honor that, to remember that, and just also celebrate the women in our communities who put so much time into food preparation and to nourishing their families, extended family, communities in a way that's very invisibilized and kind of hidden and, you know, part of everyday life. Because I think that a lot of women, my mother included, is just like, oh, we cook because we have to, you know, and it's what we do, right? And so I think that, you know, my mom taught me how to cook, but my dad taught me how to eat, you know, like, he, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I think that, to me, I also just feel really grateful for the mostly women in my life from the mosque who have made all kinds of things that I have loved growing up and continue to. So I wanted to sort of honor them and also document these recipes, because I don't know if you've experienced this in your own community, but I find that a lot of the people of my generation, you know, we're living busy lives. People are trying to find ways to speed up the cooking process or rely on pre-mixed things or curry powders or other kinds of stuff to kind of help the meal get on the table faster. Whereas I think our mothers had a different relationship to the cooking process, maybe because they didn't have those conveniences and couldn't rely on them. But also, I don't want to lose the processes that they have undertaken in preparing food. You know, even if we don't always do it all the time, I think recording that archive of how that cooking takes place, there's just so much diversity and variety in how food gets prepared. And I want to be able to capture some of that and create a space for it to be honored. And I realize there's lots of places online that are doing that. Like, there's lots of places you can access South Asian recipes of all kinds. But I'm not sure that there is a place that's dedicated to just dal.
Just dal. That's what it's about, dal. But it's dal, and it's also storytelling about dal. And that's the part, yes, that maybe you're not going to get when you're just looking online. It's, you know, the recipes are there, but not necessarily the intricate relationships that are being made over dal and through dal, right? You know, I think it's really beautiful to me that you're thinking of this as partly a way to kind of honor the work of women, ancestors, folks in your family who have been nourishing generations of people. And, you know, and it does make me think also of one of the beautiful things about dal is you can stretch it. If you have extra guests, you know, you can make it a little, you can always increase it a little bit more, right? And
yeah,
so
about know. That, it's, I would say that if I'm going to a community potluck or food share, it's almost always the thing I bring, because it's so easy to make such a gigantic portion of it. When I cook dal, I almost always cook it with 5 cups of lentils and then just give away or freeze the portions you're not using, right? It scales very easily.
I want to ask you questions about that. But before I do, I just want to ask you a question about how to translate, I guess, the way that aunties in our communities cook into recipe. My experience is that aunties don't do recipes. Aunties are just like, what do you mean? You just put this much of this and you put it in the pot, then you do this. And then you're like, wait, what? And I've, you know, watched this happen with my dad, who later in his life has become the household cook as he's taking care of my mom. And his way of learning how to do a recipe is often through a video or through having, you know, another auntie on FaceTime, because it's really difficult to get anybody to write down the very specific things. You know, my mom will just say this much and just show like a knuckle on her finger rather than giving a measurement, right? So there's also something about trying to measure things which are so natural, right, to the women that you're talking about.
And that's come up in some of the episodes that I've recorded so far, that different mothers or grandmothers have had different approaches to that. When I'm doing those cooking episodes, I do try to use some type of measuring tool or eyeball it. I'm not measuring every single ingredient that someone is offering, because I think that's too time consuming. And also, dal is a very forgiving dish, right? So if you put a little bit more or less of something, and a lot of things are to taste, like how much salt would you like? How spicy do you want it? Do you like fresh coriander or not, right? Or does it taste like soap to you? So I think that there's a lot of ways that even when I'm writing out these recipes, there's a little bit of that instruction intended, so that this or this, so that it can kind of be modified to your own taste.
Okay, so what's your go-to dal recipe? Are you ready to share it?
Sure, yeah. My go-to recipe is my mother's dal, which I hope to explore at another point, because it has changed over time. So when I was a kid, she used to put a lot of chana dal and then a little bit less mung dal and red lentils or masoor dal. And then it became half and half mung dal and masoor dal. And now I think it's even just mostly masoor dal. So things can change. And also, her recipe used to have a lot more ground coriander seed in it than it does now. When I told her how much she used to put in it, she was astonished. She said, oh, that's too spicy, you know? So that's been an interesting process for me to see how her preferences and her cooking style of this dish has changed over time. But the base of the dish, do you want me to narrate it?
Sure.
Okay. And I'll just tell you for one portion, like 1 cup of lentils. So if we're making it for 1 cup of lentils, I would do half and half, half a cup of red or masoor dal, which is skinned and split, and then half a cup of mung dal, which is also skinned and split. You can soak it for a little bit, or you don't have to, whatever you want, but definitely need to wash it until the water is clear. And in one pot, you would add like a pinch of cumin seeds, 1/4 teaspoon of turmeric powder, and maybe like a tablespoon of oil, neutral oil, but you could use olive too, and then cut up a small onion or like 1/4 of a medium to large onion, and then fry that up for a little bit so that the onions get soft. Then you can add the drained lentils and 1 green chili, like a long or small green chili cut in half, but the stem is still intact, and throw that in with the water that you add to it to boil. And then sometimes I add a small amount of, like a small handful of fresh coriander root or something for just to infuse the flavor. So that's one pot, and you get that going and boil until soft. And then the masala pot, which is, I realize people call that different kinds of things, like masala, tempering, tarka, you know, but my mom always called it just the masala. And in that pot, you put more oil, a few tablespoons, maybe even more than that, maybe like 1/4 to 1/3 cup of oil, if you're the oil is part of what makes it tasty, but I adjust accordingly depending on who I'm cooking it for. In that, you heat it on a medium high heat, you add 1/2 to 3/4 cup of blended tomatoes. You could use canned or you can use freshly blended tomatoes. I actually, sometimes I put the tomatoes in, sometimes I put the spices in first, but it depends. 2 to 3 teaspoons of blended garlic, 3 teaspoons of ground coriander, 1/2 teaspoon of cumin seed that is ground, 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 teaspoons of sambal oleic paste. I don't know if I'm saying that word right, but that's become part of my mom's dal recipe. And then maybe like 2 teaspoons of tomato paste, 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric. And what else am I forgetting? That's most of the masala there. And then you kind of like let that mix and cook down a bit. And then when the lentils are ready, you toss it in and then mix it all together.
So the sambal oelek is the Indonesian chili garlic paste, right?
Yeah.
Which is like interesting that that's part of the recipe, because that's also sort of part of a different and related kind of colonial circuit.
Right? Yeah. I asked my mom about that, and she said something like, I don't know when or how she got introduced to it, but she just said that she uses it in a lot of her cooking because she just finds that it tastes nice. Yeah. And so she still uses the green chilies. And before that, she just used chili powder of some kind.
Yeah.
But she prefers the sambal taste. And yeah.
That's awesome. It's so interesting.
Oh, and then fresh coriander on top if people can eat that, you know?
I feel very sad for the people who taste soap, because coriander is so magical.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. It's been such a big part of the table I grew up eating mm-hmm. at. You know, we put coriander in and on everything. Mm-hmm. And so when I met people for the first time later in university that couldn't eat it, I was sad for them, but I was also so confused. I was like, what do you mean you can't eat this? It's so amazing. And what do you mean it tastes like soap to you?
Yeah, I hope the soap people have other things they can taste and really enjoy, because it makes me sad to think about.
Makes me sad too.
Yeah. I want to just ask you, the way you described your recipe just now, you were talking about proportions, right? So a cup of dal, of masoor dal, and you do you're adding various things. And so it's scalable, as you said, kind of up and down. It struck me as you were describing it that there's also a sort of like food chemistry principle there, like a salt, fat, acid, heat kind of way of thinking about how the ingredients come together, which is...
Oh, and I forgot the acid. We do want to put some lemon juice on top or lime. Yeah.
Yeah. Just that little zing, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And so, you know, I feel like that's part of the learning. You don't necessarily capture in a written recipe, right? But the learning about how the different tastes coordinate with each other. If you're putting tamarind juice in a South Indian dal, right? How does it add a different kind of dimension to that acid flavor, right?
Definitely, yeah.
I wonder if you... I'm going to ask you maybe a last question. Pressure cookers, yes or no?
I feel neutral. My mom uses pressure cookers a lot for her dal. I don't have a good pressure cooker, so I've always just used a big pot. And I often pre-soak things so that it can cut down on the cooking time. Mm. And I find also when I'm cooking in such a large volume of 5 cups of lentils, you need a really big pressure cooker to accommodate that. And so I don't find that it saves me a ton of time. I only use it for other kinds of lentils, like if I'm cooking, or, you know, black beans or chickpeas or something.
Is there anything else you want to share about your project before we wrap up?
I think that maybe I'll just share the website. It's thedalproject.wordpress.com, and dal is spelled D-A-A-L. I realize that people spell it multiple ways, but that's just one that I've gotten used to. Which I think is also an interesting thing, because when language is a sound and not necessarily a letter, I shouldn't say not a letter, but just in a different alphabet, right? Mm-hmm. Then, of course, people will spell things in many kinds of ways.
So it's D-A-A-L.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for sharing about this exciting summer project, and looking forward to hearing more about delicious dals being made.
Thank you so much for interviewing me. I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dal Project. Follow me on Instagram at Dal Project. Email me at dalproject@protonmail.com. Dal is spelt D-A-A-L. Intro and exit music are excerpts from the song Creep by Lal. Thanks for tuning in.